Hey guys, I'm a member of Alcoholics Anonymous and a member of Cocaine Anonymous. My name is Brandon.
Hi, Brandon.
And this was today's reading out of one of my meditation books and felt like it applied. So it's called Breakthrough. Lake shadows, color of cold, willow branches weep ice, swan rises dazzling in the starlight. After long self-cultivation, one's accumulated energy reaches a threshold and then bursts out full, breathing and vibrant. Without the careful building of momentum, this moment of release would never have been possible. With long years of preparation and experience, the freeing of the soul will not be mere dissipation, but will be so strongly focused that if it lifts one into a higher state of awareness, when one's spiritual energy emerges, it feels like a swan rising from the water. Once you have reached this level of stored energy, you will be a different person. On one hand, you may take genuine comfort in the point of attainment that you have made. On the other hand, you now see all the other possibilities that remain for you to explore. With the emergence of great possibilities comes the need for responsibility. If you diverge from your life's path in order to explore new vistas, remember how far you are flying, and remember to return at the proper times. Only you can decide how to arrange your life. Once you are a strong flyer, you must still use wisdom to direct your flight. And the reason why I think that applies is if we look at 10 and 11, this is like a new, as one of our mentors, Mark Houston, says, the 10th and the 11th steps are a completely new realm. They're a completely new existence that to most people don't know that it even exists. The possibility of living in a way where you're connected to the source of all things that is reached as a result of working the first 9 steps, you start to experience reality in a way that most do not. The spiritual life is not a theory. We have to live it. So we go out and we start to live this new existence. And we need a mechanism to communicate with the world, and that mechanism is the 10th step. Okay? There's some very simple instructions in the 10th step of how that is to how we're to operate within that realm. And I'll just read the paragraph that contains, to me, I think you look at it as if there's 4 instructions, I think that there's 5 instructions, but it's just, we're saying the same thing, we're just dissecting where the deviation between the lines is. So this thought, which thought? Amends, which we just had Brandon and Bill tell us about. The thought of amends brings us to step 10, which suggests that we continue to take personal inventory and continue to set right any new mistakes as we go along. We vigorously commence this way of living as we cleaned up the past. So as we're making our amends, we're starting to live in this 10th step in a way that really wasn't even possible before we got to this point. We have entered the world of the spirit. I heard it once and I just love it. If you're going to a therapist, ask your therapist how many sessions you have to go to before you enter the world of the spirit. What? But yet we have 12 steps, and by the time you get to 10, you've entered the world of the spirit. Sounds pretty cool, huh? Way easier than, like, you know, 6 years of therapy. Our next function is to grow an understanding of effectiveness. This is not an overnight matter. It should continue for our lifetime. So continue to watch. Here's the first instruction. What am I watching for? Well, if you've written a proper inventory, you've written about resentments, you've written about fear, you've written about your conduct. Some people call it sex. I prefer to call it conduct. You've written about those. You've gotten a pretty good idea of how you show up in life. And then you've shared that with somebody in the fifth step. They've identified maybe where you were a little bit off in some of the things that you identified. And then if you've got a competent sponsor, they gave you a list of all these things that you're maybe false beliefs and way you're interacting with the world that are a little distorted, not correct. So what am I watching for? All that stuff, right? Okay, and it's funny because in my head, what really happens is when I start to act in a certain way, the voice in my head actually goes, oh, here you go again. You think you're pretty important, don't you? Really important for you to show these people how important you are. Yeah, yeah. And then so then hopefully I start to slow down. So we continue to watch for the selfishness, the dishonesty, the resentment, and the fear. When these crop up, notice it doesn't say if these crop up, it says when these crop up, we ask, second instruction, ask God to remove them at once. Third instruction, we discuss them with someone immediately. Fourth instruction for me is that we make amends quickly if we've harmed anyone. Then we resolutely turn, fifth instruction, our thoughts to someone we can help. Now, make and turn are similar, and that can be one process. If you're making amends, you're turning to someone else. That's where I say I've got five, where you say you've got four. But we're still reading the same lines, right? Love and tolerance of others is our code. So what does the tenth step look like for me? I'll explain kind of how I do it, and then I'll explain an experience that I've been having over the last, let's say, month with a sponsee around a very specific issue. So when I start to experience this discomfort of something, and I start to watch for it, then I'll sit and say, God, please remove this. Okay. Now, what's fascinating to me is that out of all the experience I have with God wanting or with God removing things, I still don't think it's going to happen. And so it literally can be as quick as, like, I'm completely resentful at everybody in my house. I'm ready to yell at them. I'm driving down the road. I get to a stoplight and I'll say, okay, God, I'm tired of thinking about this. I'm tired of just assassinating these people in my head. Let's say when I go through this intersection, you'll just remove this resentment from me. And then, like, I'm 2 miles down the road and I'm like, whoa, wait, what happened to that resentment? Literally, it happens like that for me. As I ask and it's gone. And then I'll usually, if it's big enough, I'll call and discuss it with somebody in my network, usually Tarek or others. I'll discuss what's happened. And then if I've harmed somebody energetically or actually through my words, then I'll make the amend. And I'll constantly be turning and looking to help some other people. Okay. I'll come back to how to receive a 10th step with my story later. Do you have anything you want to hit on any of that?
As you go through these steps.
You haven't introduced yourself yet.
Oh, I'm Tarek. I'm an addict. I've been saying it all day. the first step we spent a lot. It's a step in a self-examination. The second step where we begin to have to turn our attention to God, whether we like it or not. The third step, I think, is really about turning out to the world. God, please take away my difficulties so victory over them may bear witness. Testimony. We commit to this way of life, and then it's incumbent on us because now we've been given an agency for God. Right? He's the principal, we're his agents. We have an agency now. We are anchored in this world by a force, I believe, is God. Some of my beliefs. And then the fourth and the fifth and the sixth step is self-examination. Again, step seven is the step that I love because it's about the spirituality of imperfection. It's about going to God with all the egg on my face and saying, I'm broken, I can't fix myself, I don't know if you're going to fix this part or not, but I need to have you in my life. So I come to it in a state of what I call poverty. And then 8 and 9 is where I turn back out to the world. It's a repetitive process. So step 10 is back into the self-examination. Step 11 is where I turn back to God. And step 12 is where I'm back with you guys. It's interesting that they have that laid out in the steps for us over and over and over. And that's what becomes a working part of our lives. Just like the book says, what used to be the hunch or the occasional inspiration eventually becomes a working part of the mind. That applies to anything that you practice. We need structure and form in the beginning in order to lose the structure and the form, where we're not making decisions anymore to do things. We're not checking a list. It's just happening because now it's been hardwired into our makeup. So I'm convinced, just like as my conception of God changes as my I go through moral development, my understanding of the 10th step changes over the course of these 11 years as well. When I first got sober, step 10 was just 4 through 9 as I walked through the day, right? And then I got introduced to this idea about intuition. So the 10th step really became about tapping your sixth sense. And then there was a phase where I went through this idea of position of neutrality, cease fighting. And then it became about staying awake. And then it became about awareness. Today it's about breathing. How often do you actually become conscious of breathing throughout the course of the day? Do a little exercise. I did this years ago. I put my alarm on my phone. I used to have a corporate job, and I had my alarm go off at 9, 10, 11, 12, 1, 2, 3, and 4. And I just wanted to see how much of the day I spent on autopilot. The majority of the day. Not conscious of breathing. You know, because I know the body breathes. God breathes through us throughout the course of the day. And let's hypothetically assume that it's God breathing. And if becoming conscious of my breath, if I do believe that God is the breathing, I'm becoming conscious of God. This is something I practice, right? And I'm not saying you have to believe this or practice this, but I'm showing you an evolution. What I'm really trying to get you to understand is that there's a lot of room for imagination and excitement and curiosity in these two steps, right? Because there's nothing worse than getting to a place where these are boring or it is a checklist. I had a sponsee a couple months ago. I asked him a question. I was like, do you ever wake up and are excited to do your morning practice, your devotional? He's like, never. I was like, we're in trouble.
At least he was honest.
Yeah, he was honest. I get excited because I like to read. I read a lot. I write a lot. I reflect a lot. I read a book recently by the guy who co-authored the 12 and 12. Everybody thinks Bill Wilson wrote the 12 and 12 all by himself. Not true. There's a guy named Tom Powers that co-authored the 12 and 12 with him. Well, this guy, Tom Powers, wrote another book called The Great Experiment, The Possibility of Knowing God. And in his book, he says anyone that walks, and I'm not telling you this is right or wrong or the way it is, but I found it very interesting when I read it in his book. He said anyone that walks a spiritual path and doesn't spend a minimum of 20 minutes a day in prayer and meditation, a minimum of 20 minutes a day reading about something that excites you having to do with the spiritual path that you're walking. And then he talks about spending time with other people that are on the same path. He's like, you're not on a spiritual path. It's an interesting thing to think about. And now I can read things like that and not get too like, oh, this dude's totally wrong. I don't know what he's talking about. Now, again, I do all those things, though, as part of my spiritual path. And I do it within the confines of another tradition, and I found it amazing that I was reading a book by a very devout Christian that was describing my way of life. Right, and there was nothing in me that was trying to discount what I was reading. All of which I'm describing to you is a result of these two steps that we're talking about, which is the 10th step and the 11th step. Because the first 9 steps, I know we talk about launching in the third step, we launch into inventory. I believe that the first nine steps launch us into the spiritual dimensions of 10 and 11. And the longer I stay clean and sober, the juice is in the 10th and 11th step. It's a great deal of juice in the 12th step as well. You know, but then there's this idea of working the 10th step when you've made all your amends. And then there's working the 10th step when you have a bunch of unfinished amends. I mean, hell, my current day-to-day life will rob me of the present moment. So what happens when I'm walking around with a bunch of unfinished amends? All right? And so I'm going to share a little bit about my eighth and ninth step, because it took me 8.5 years to approach 230 people in institutions. Now, of those 230, I'd say ballpark 50, they didn't want to see me. They never responded. But those other 180 or so, I communicated with and I made approaches. And I have made all the amends I am consciously aware of outside of this last period of time since I went through the steps last year. I went through the steps this time last year. And so I'm sure if I were to sit down right now and go back through the steps, if I do my reflection, there might be some amends I need to make from this last 12-month period. All right, believe it or not, once we get clean and sober, we do not stop harming people. It's part of being human. We're going to step on people's toes. It just won't be as catastrophic usually. Although I've done some crazy shit in sobriety as well that I've had to clean up. And so this idea of learning how to take an inventory of yourself, like one of my mentors calls it the walking around step. When I wake up, it's the 11th step. When I walk out into the world, it's the 10th step. But I don't even think of it as 10 anymore. It's like a combination of 10 and 11. And my task during the day is I'm trying to remember God in my breath as often as possible. That's my practice. And some days there's a fluidity to it. And other days there's too much overthinking. There's too much over-identification with the things roaring around in my head. Now, if you're in early recovery, you might be, what the fuck is this dude talking about? But somebody has to pull you with a vision. I know my task at hand here is to like sort of come, you know, remember what it was like for me 11 years ago, right? What pulled me in 11 years ago was this idea of like sponsorship. I just wanted to sponsor people. You know, I got that from Dante. You know, Dante was my first great teacher in this program, and there was something that he made sponsorship look super cool. And I wanted what he had, and I was like, dude, he's been sponsoring people. At that time, it was 21 years, and so I was like, dude, I'm going to do this thing. And there was a part of me that knew I was going to smoke crack again unless I started sponsoring people. And I knew that. There was no talking me out of it. There was no voice in my head trying to discount what I was realizing at the time. And so that pulled me in. But then as I've stayed clean and sober over the years, what's fascinated me is the spiritual realm, the world of the spirit. And that's what these steps are about. And this 10th step is the most difficult step to practice. You've got the disciplines that Brandon talked about, which are watch, observation, communication with God, asking, turning back to what I'm doing. And the one that, and I haven't taken Brandon to the steps in a long time, but one that I've incorporated now that I didn't used to was this idea of cease fighting. So when I take someone through the steps, the 10th step is a 4-week process. The first week they write watch down on a bunch of note cards everywhere, dashboard, nightstand, mirror in the bathroom, desk in the office. I want them to see this word watch. And I incorporate now this word witness. I want you to witness your life. Witness it. Watch it. Observe how things affect you. Don't do anything. I just want you to watch and observe for a week. The second week is watch, and then I want you to become conscious of God in your breath. Ask. I think when I become conscious of God, it's just like turning to God. Right? There's one of the most powerful lines in our big book is in the back of the book in the spiritual experience appendix. It says that most of us believe the essence of a spiritual experience is simply the awareness of a power greater than ourselves. The essence of anything is a really important concept to think about. And then it says the essence of the spiritual experience, which is what we're all after here, right? They said it's just the awareness of a power greater than ourselves. Didn't say relationship with. It just says awareness. That means I need to think about this idea of God as often as possible. And that's what this 10th step can, if you're watching and asking and then turning and then cease fighting. That's the fourth one. To cease fighting and attempt to practice a position of neutrality. That's a 10th step for me today, currently. And this is what I try to practice. And I'm going to tell you from my experience, it's a very difficult step to practice, if not the hardest. Because of this thing up here, the mind. We have a mind that's literally trying to kill us on multiple levels, not just the physical. And so our weapons in spiritual warfare are really the 10th and 11th step right now. And so I can go on and on. I want Brandon, he's probably got something. He's chewing on the bit over here.
So the... So one of the things that in early recovery that people don't tell us about or we're not informed about is how to actually receive a 10th step call. And if I call Tarek and I'm wrapped up around something, and Tarek, Brandon referred to this earlier today, if Tarek agrees with everything I'm saying, I'm dead. Like if you're co-signing my stuff, I'm probably in trouble. And what's fascinating is that if I call somebody that's not in recovery, they absolutely want to co-sign all my. She's a bitch. She shouldn't have done that. Or he, you know, you should. I'd want to kill that guy, right? But. When I call somebody that's in recovery that actually knows how to receive it, what they're doing is they're listening for a couple things. Number one, if I've actually created a harm in the situation. And they're also not going to... They're trying to change my perspective on how I'm looking at something. So I can't tell you a simple one that comes to mind is... The mother of my children kicked me out, and it was kind of the catalyst for me getting sober. But even with inventory and things like that, I still like wanted to punish her from time to time. And there was a particular time where she was making a demand for a payment on something that I technically had 30 days to pay her, and I was going to like give her the finger for 30 days and then finally pay her. But there was a part of me that the internal watching where I didn't want to continue to harm her, but I couldn't convince myself to actually just make the payment. So I called Tarek and I told him the story, and he goes, "So why are you calling me?" And I said, "Because I want you to say something magical that would make me pay her, because I know that that's what I'm supposed to do." And he just said, "Well, if she didn't have the mechanism to pay it, would you pay it?" And I said, "Yes." And he said, "Okay." And I'm like, "Thanks, that's all I needed." Literally that statement changed my mind to the point where I got off the phone with him, went online, made the payment right away. Because it was no longer about punishing her or being right. It was about my kids getting the things that they needed. And so, but if he's co-signing me, he's like, "Yeah, man, you got 30 days. I'd make her, just make her wait." Right? Like, that doesn't make me an effective person. Okay, so I get a phone call from a guy that's all wrapped up around something. One of the first things, if he's calling me, he's seen something. And so one of the first questions I ask with anybody that's gotten through up to step 10 is, when you prayed and meditated on it, what happened? Guys that know me well enough, they either lie or... they have already done it, because what the response, if they say, "Well, I haven't done that yet," I'll say, "Okay, call me in 10 minutes after you pray and meditate about it." And then they call back, and what's amazing is that when they call back, they're so much more calm about it. So no longer wrapped up around it. Then what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to shift their perspective and see how that they've created this situation, or to give them, just to break the argument down to the point where they get a different perspective on it. And then I'm also listening, "Do you owe an amends here?" That's all I'm doing when I'm receiving a call. Now, every once in a while, you get one that's kind of fascinating that draws out over time, and a person can be in the experience. I talked to him before this week because I was going to use this example, and I wanted to make sure he was okay with it, and he said it was, if it would be helpful. So I've got a guy that's in my network whose wife is dying from cancer. Okay? She's been dying from cancer for 4 or 5 years. She'll go through treatment, and she'll get better for a little while. She'll stop treatment because it's getting so bad, and then she'll heal some, and then so this has been a cycle that's going on, and he, for a period of time, he would call me, and he's just like, I don't know if I can deal with this anymore, and I'd say, what are you saying? And he'd say, I don't know. And so we were working through that for a while, and finally one day he said, I just don't think I want to be married to her anymore. And I said, okay, cool. I'm like, now that's going to have consequences associated with it. We started talking about it. And then the next day I got a text from him that says, I don't know what I was thinking. Just act like that conversation never happened. Okay, so he got up against a belief system that he should stay in this relationship no matter what. And said, no, I'm not willing to look at it. Well, he calls me a couple weeks ago, and like she's been not getting her radiation for a while, and she's actually doing really, really well. She went back to the doctor, and the doctor said, you need to start back, and we're going to have, this regimen's going to take 5 years, and we think we can beat it. Well, he calls me because he's like, I can't do this for 5 more years. I can't put up with this for 5 more years. I can't live this way of life, watching her suffer like this for 5 more years. And I'm like, so what are you saying? He goes, I just don't think that I'm willing to stick around if she's going to go through this treatment again. And so we talked to Brown about that, about the consequences of this, choosing to leave or choosing to stay. And we went through this whole thing, and what's happened as a result of that is we had some honest dialogue, and now he's committed to staying in the relationship no matter what happens, but he's explored the option of what it would look like if he wasn't in the relationship anymore. He was finally honest with himself about what this looks like and what the consequences of staying or leaving's about, and he's fully reconciled in the thing that he's going to trust God in this situation, and it's going to resolve itself. Okay? Now, most people aren't willing to have that level of honesty in a conversation with somebody in their network about what they're really thinking around a situation. And we went all the way to the extreme. We went all the way to what people are going to think about him, how that's going to be for him, how he's going to deal with himself. Like, we talked about the whole gamut of leaving or staying. And so he's able to make a decision now based on full knowledge of both sides of the spectrum. This is, like, the coolest experience of receiving a 10th step I've had, because I had to call him out on a bunch of his belief systems and the way that he thinks about things so that he could get to a place where his decision is whole. He's okay with whatever happens and trust God in this situation, because he was finally willing to come to grips with the things that he needed to come to grips with and talk about the things that he needed to talk about, to the point where he's not going into this decision with this lurking notion in the back of his mind that, well, if it gets too bad, I'm going to leave. Like, that's not an option anymore. He's decided. And so this is kind of like the next frontier of existence if you really can tap in and practically apply the 10th step. Because if you have people in your network that are trained on how to deal with things, there's nothing you can't walk through. But if you're not willing to actually practice this and use it as a tool, you're going to be up against shit all the time in your head thinking you shouldn't think it or you shouldn't experience it or this isn't the way that God's going to work or whatever. And then you're going to have to deal with that in your own head. So I encourage you to really make sure that you look at your network of people that are capable of receiving a 10th step call, because this is the coolest shit you'll experience in life, period. So that's what I had on that.
Interesting thing is, we've talked about two ends of the spectrum, but it's about the same step. You know, as Brandon was talking, one of the things that came into my consciousness was how he and I have been 10-stepping. We go through, we've had a couple of hiccups over the past 18 months where we didn't talk Monday through Friday, maybe once or twice. I don't know if there has been a full week in the last, not 8 years?
8 years.
8 years. Not a full week has gone by where I haven't spoken to this man. And of those 8 years, most of those were Monday through Friday phone calls. Like, almost, like, we did this thing like every morning. And then I was married at the time and had a kid. He's married with 4 kids. So we knew if one of us got a call from the other on the weekend, it was bad news. Right? Because we were with
What's
our
up?
Families. We're like, oh, I got to stop what I'm doing. This is a 10 step call. But that's important, though. You know? It is. It's extremely important. And so, granted, you could be sitting in here and you're not far from the needle. You're not far from the crack pipe. You're not far from that last bar stool. And so you're like, you know, all this stuff you're talking about is really cool, but how's this going to relate to me? Well, the coolest promises in the big book are the 10-step promises, as far as I'm concerned. You know, they can have those 9-step promises, to be honest with you, because the 10-step promises are much more powerful. And it says, we've ceased fighting anything or anyone, even drugs and alcohol, for by this time sanity will have returned. We will seldom be interested in drugs or alcohol. If tempted, we recoil from them as from a hot flame. We react sanely and normally, and we'll find that this has happened automatically. We will see that our new attitude towards drugs and alcohol has been given to us with any thought or effort on our part. It just comes. That's the miracle of it. We're not fighting it. I'm not avoiding temptation. I feel as though I've been placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. That's amazing for a guy who thought he was going to smoke crack for the rest of his life. The fact that I arrived at this point. But what's always fascinated me about this passage, it says, we will see that our new attitude towards alcohol and drugs has been given to us without any thought or effort on our part. What's the thought and effort been directed to? Destruction of self-centeredness. That's where the thought and effort has gone. You know, once you connect those dots and you realize that the manifestation of our spiritual malady comes out in being driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, and self-pity, and because that internal condition becomes so unbearable, we have to have an effect produced in our lives. Alcohol and drugs produced the effect. They gave us the ease and comfort we were looking for. Then we cross that imaginary line in the sand, but we have a part of our mind that continually says, man, drugs and alcohol did so much for me, and they're doing something to me, but it's worth an attempt to try to get back what they got, what they did for me. Right? All of that, if you connect the dots and see how it's an internal condition problem, it's an inside-out job, right? You have to change it on the inside first. That's where the change happens. And the 10-step promises, we're on page 85, folks. On page 63, they said, hey, your life's no longer your business. The third step, right? That's pretty much what it says, by the way. Your life's no longer your business. It's mine. You know, my life is God's business. My conduct in my life is my business, though. I have to take responsibility for it. And now we're on page 85, 22 pages later, and now they're telling me I can use my willpower along certain lines. That's amazing. It doesn't have to be a long, drawn-out, arduous process as we move into the 11th step. So the 10th step can be about, you know, getting to this miracle here of that promise, and if you work the first 9 steps, this is what will happen. Right? Or it can be about the investigation of awareness, your intuition, the sixth sense, building, bonding with other alcoholics and addicts so you can share your dark passenger with them. You know, if you watch Dexter, you know what I'm referring to. The dark passenger. Everyone sitting in this room has a dark passenger. You know, my deal is my dark passenger is known by all my closed mouth friends. You know, I have a group of closed mouth friends that know stuff about me that I struggle with. There's no judgment in the communication. That's probably the most important attribute that you need to have in those relationships. And then we slowly will slide into the 11th step here. You want to tackle this? You want me to?
11th?
Yeah. Unless you have something else on 10.
No, 10. Well, I'm good on 10. I was going to read clarity. So this is called clarity, also out of the same book that I read from earlier. Can you see a sound? Can you hear a light? Can you unite your senses? Can you turn inward? What we are all seeking is clarity. Forget about religious rationalizations. Forget about elaborate explanations. What we all want is clarity. What we abhor is ignorance. Ignorance confuses us, brings us misfortune and sorrow, and makes us miserable. If we have clarity, then we can live with equanimity. It is a misconception that spirituality brings everlasting happiness. There is no such thing. Sadness still comes to the wise, but unlike most people, their clarity of mind allows them to see beyond the temporal emotionalism of the moment. They are far-seeing, and so happiness and sorrow become the same to them. True clarity is more than just being smart, more than just being wise. Clarity manifests from meditation. It comes when you can unite all the faculties of the mind and unify them into a magnificent light of perception. It is hard to talk of this in anything but mystical terms. Our language is unfamiliar with the frontiers of the spirit because few have ever seen those limits, let alone describe them. But let's try. If you unite sound with vision, then you will create light. That light is the concentrated force of the mind. It is by that brightness that truth is revealed. So, when we start to get into 11, the limits of the 11th step, really the limits of the 10th and 11th step, as Tarek said, is it's endless. You cannot find the end of the 11th step. It goes on perpetually, forever, with no time or limitation of anything ever. Just for fun, the other day I was pulling some just various 11th step reading books off my shelf, and like I have a stack like this tall that's not even the whole stack. It was just the ones I was pulling off the shelf, and they range from Taoism to your thoughts creating your reality, to Buddhism, to really even some Think and Grow Rich and things like that. That there are these books that there's underlying spiritual messages in if you read them properly. There's some great Zen Buddhism theory out there that basically says that you don't need a book on Zen. You can read any book and find Zen in the book. Because once you reach a certain level of spirituality, everything becomes that which is a learning. Everything becomes that which you can experience God through. And so there is no limitation on the 11th step. We'll talk about prayer, we'll talk about meditation, but these are simply practices that are within the step that the step talks about it on page 87. It says there are many helpful books. Suggestions about these may be obtained from one's priest, minister, or rabbi. Be quick to see where religious people are right. Make use of what they have to offer. We could do an entire day on talking about the 11th step, and we would not run out of material. Things that we can try, experiments that we can do together. What happens is when you get to this step, what you start to realize is that the only limitation is the belief in limitation. That's it. If we take the back in Roswell, New Mexico, there was an experience where one night the Air Force said that there was a UFO. The next morning they came out and they said it was a weather balloon. Okay? What did they just do? They define the argument. Weather balloon, UFO. What was it not? Anything else? Okay? One of the most dogmatic beliefs in religion in this country is you're either a Christian or you're going to hell. What did they leave out? Everything else. Is it possible to adopt some of these philosophies and beliefs and explore them in other religions and find the limits of that? The most that I've learned about Christianity came from a Hindu. When you start to explore the 11 steps and the depths of it, things will prove one theory in another area. You'll be reading here and you'll be like, wait, that goes over here. And it all connects, and what you start to see is it all ties together. And that's what the 11th step is. It's this kind of this soup of awesomeness where you get to experience it. And yes, it involves prayer, and yes, it involves meditation. But what is prayer? What is meditation? Why do we have to define the limits of either one of those? I love to ask this question in workshops is what if all of your thoughts were actually prayers? And the first time I asked it in a workshop was the best response I ever got, because the guy said, well, those would be some pretty fucked up prayers. But what if they were? Would you endeavor to clean your thoughts?
Oh. I remember being in treatment. I was instructed by Randy, who was taking me through the steps at the time, that he suggested that I should pray on my knees. I was in a treatment center, and I was in the corner room in the basement. We had bunk beds, right? And I remember setting my clock, so I woke up before everybody the first time. And I got on my knees, and I was on the bottom bunk. And I remember, like, looking over my shoulder, seeing somebody was looking at me. But in those early days, I so didn't want to fucking smoke crack. I was convinced that I was going to die living the way I was living. And so when he said, I would suggest getting on your knees to pray, I didn't have a problem with it, right? Because I wanted to live. But like from that to where I'm at today seems like a lifetime ago. Because like I said at the beginning, our conception of God will change as our moral development changes. So, you know, over the last 3 or 4 years, and I still struggle with character stuff, right? You know, but I'm convinced that spirituality and character refinement are one and the same. You know, spirituality is not some other world thing. It's not ethereal. It's not ephemeral. It's right here in day-to-day life. That's why I used to love Mark. One of the coolest things I ever heard Mark Houston say was, God is in the pots and pans. The first time I heard him say it, I was like, what the hell is he talking about? But now that I practice these things of trying to, like, remember God as often as possible, maybe there will be times when whatever God is remembers me, right? If you practice this stuff, you will be driving down the road one day and the remembrance of your higher power just shows up. You don't make a conscious decision to remember. The remembrance in itself just shows up on its own. And that's a pretty phenomenal thing for people like us, for anyone, I think. And I've been fascinated by it because I'm convinced that dogma and doctrine stunt our ideas about God. They don't leave room for investigation, to ask questions, for curiosity, which makes all of this really fun if you can apply that into the 11th step. And I think one of the most important things that Bill Wilson and the first people that authored this book wrote put in here was that sentence that Brandon referred to. Be quick to see where religious people are right. Not that they're always right. Just be quick to see where they are right and make use of what they offer. And that's all this is. This will make it fun. You can find out and then see, like Brandon said, I love what he said, to find the limits in everything. Everything's limited. All of it. Right? But when you see that, then it becomes limitless. It's a paradox. You're not confined anymore to having to understand and to know. And you're okay with the uncertainty. But I want to share a few things about the 11th step. It was suggested to me that I have an altar, that I put important things on my altar. The altar is not going to signify that you're following a religion, but what I have on my altar are important things to me, right? Like my altar right now has a symbol from, I think, 5 or 6 different religions, right? And then it's got like one of my dog's ashes and other really cool stuff that's important to me because that's like a sacred space. So if you want to have some fun, this is available. But I do, like, I'd suggest to every guy I sponsor, you need to create a space in your home, like a sacred space where you have your books. You want to turn this into a devotional. You know, I have this other sponsee, and I don't know if he recalls this conversation we had about a year ago, but we were talking about the 11th step, and I asked the question on the phone. I asked him, like, why do you pray and meditate at the beginning of your day? And he's a good sponsee, and he had the textbook answer. It was like, so I can grow in understanding and effectiveness, and so I don't struggle, and I can relax and take it easy. And this is not the only sponsee I've had this conversation with over the years. And I was like, so what you do in the morning really has nothing to do with God. And it's, you see what I'm getting at? What is the time that you're spending with God all about? Is it just about you and being effective and relaxing it and not struggling? You got to ask yourself these questions. I'm going to shut up here in a second, but I'm also a guy that's convinced I grow spiritually during my darkest hour. I find a deeper conscious contact with my higher power during my darkest hour. One of my darkest hours was the 2014 calendar year. I have a list. I got this new app, this note app, so I was going back through all my old notes, and I didn't realize I made a list of all the shit that went down in my life in that year. And so I'm going to share that list with you guys. A kidney stone. I slip and I hurt my back back when we had that snowstorm, and then I had 4 trips to the ER. Our house was burglarized. I had to put our dog down while my wife was out of town on a girls' trip. It was her dog. I had my wife and daughter were too scared to be in the house after it was burglarized that we had to move into my parents. This is it. 5 years sober. No, 7 years sober. Moving in with my parents. I had knee surgery. They told me I'd be on crutches for 3 to 4 days, but then when I got out of surgery, it turned into 7 or 8 weeks. I started gaining a ton of weight. My daughter began to have seizures and was diagnosed with epilepsy, so we had to stay in the hospital for 2.5 days. Then she broke her elbow. I had a severe infection. They found a lump on my throat that I had to have removed. I was silent for a week. I could not talk. Then I had another surgery to remove other polyps they'd found all in my sinuses. And then I had these awful tenants that I had to get out of my house because they weren't paying rent. And the state of Georgia is a really difficult place to evict somebody. So I dealt with all of this, and
you also broke the screen on the refrigerator at your parents' house, and you had to replace that.
Oh, yeah. I did that, and then I had to deal with identity. Somebody stole my identity in Estonia. That all happened within the span of 9 months. 7 to 9 months, I can't remember. But I will tell you, there was this one, and I continued with recovery, unity, and service. But what happened was with this time is what passed it. I would envision that a lot of people go through something like this and they tell God to this. This is what they do at some point. The morning I did this, I was sitting in my bathroom and I put on one of my favorite shirts and I gained so much weight I couldn't wear it. And so I ripped it off like the Incredible Hulk. I was so furious. And I yelled and I screamed in this mirror and I told God to suck my you know what. And I was like, after all the fucking work I've done for you, why the fuck is this happening? I'm trying to recreate the situation because I was so indignant. And then immediately after, in the same experience, I walked out of the bathroom and I dropped to my knees and I started praying. And the prayers were, please help me. And I started, you know, crying. And it was the most sincere prayer I've done up to that point. So I didn't turn my back. The perseverance that I gained through that experience drove me further into my prayer life with God. Because I understand that my struggle will change me, right? I want to read something. In essence, what is love? In essence, it's a state of need. The lover is in need of the beloved, God. Since the beloved, me, reflects something which the lover senses as missing in himself. So I'm missing something. The experience of love exposes a veiled, unconscious desire to unite with an idolized partner who will supply the bits missing in myself. The teacher stresses that when this need awakens, rather than fulfilled, it has to be sustained. Need, he argues, the poverty, creates the primary vehicle for change, evolution, and growth. Without need, there is no desire. Without desire, there is no movement. Therefore, to perpetuate a state of need is more conducive to change than to satisfy the need. So it's better to stay thirsty than to have your thirst quenched. And so all those experiences that I just listed to you guys kept me thirsty. For some reason, I was still pulled back to the practices of the 10th and 11th step. They were still there. I've been around long enough to watch enough people not go through nearly as much as that and not stay around, not stay committed to the practices. And what that prepared me for was the shitstorm that I had in 2017, which it was in a 30-day period. I took care of my dad as he died, and my wife asked me to move out, and I was homeless. And that led to a sincerity in my prayer life because I just knew I needed God. You know, so the prayers were not about, I'm going to smoke crack, please help me, God. It was about, God, I have to be conscious of your presence in my life. And here's the thing, you're all of this. God's all of it. But what has happened over the course of time is I still do the practices regardless of what's happening in my external life and how I feel on the inside. And my capacity to persevere. I mean, I can tell y'all pretty much, I can look everyone in the eyes and pretty much, life can pretty much throw whatever it wants at me. Okay? It's not the crack or the dope or the alcohol that's going to kill me. Right? That's because of what this program has taught me, what these steps have taught me. There's so much available to you in these two steps. And I know we've got some new people in here that are like, again, it's, you're close to the spike. You're close to the crack pipe. You're close to the bar stool. So you're like, dude, I just don't want to shoot dope anymore. I get it. It's not about shooting dope, though. All right? That's not the problem here. The problem is there's something inside of us that needs to wake up.
I'm good.
You good?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Let's take a 15-minute break.
Mm-hmm.